Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one-coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3. This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9/1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
The Delphi case has taken yet another turn, and it's not just about legal motions and missing evidence this time. Well, it actually is kind of about missing evidence. It's part of it. It's about psychology. It's about behavior and the human mind behind all of it, or possibly minds with an S, plural. With Ron Logan's alleged confession, the eerie behavior of Keegan Klein. Yes, he's now been brought back into the fold with new allegations. And a prosecution that seemingly ignored key evidence. This case raises serious psychological questions about guilt, deception, I'd say desperation as well, and the power of manipulation. Today we are joined by psychotherapist Siobhan Scott to help us understand what's really going on inside the minds of some of the key players in this case. And Siobhan, let's start here. We do often see, do we see confessions, whether true or false, being ignored by law enforcement? And what does it say about the psychology both of the suspect and the investigators when something this significant is just basically swept under the rug all those years ago?
Yeah, the whole thing is just a muddle. If we're looking at false confessions, and I'm guessing that's what they believed this was, I mean, maybe not, but false confessions happen because of psychosis, which is what we can speculate Richard Allen's confessions were, because he was clearly psychotic. And so a psychotic confession should not be considered a confession. You're looking at coercion, and clearly Ricky Davis, the person who's saying he heard Ron Logan's confession, was not in a situation where he was being coerced by anyone to say this. Attention seeking, could he have been making it up? And then looking at, does this person who's reporting the confession, does the person have credibility? And in this case, I think, you know, certainly it would be reasonable to say that Ricky Davis's credibility could be questioned. He had decades a criminal history, a long rap sheet with everything from running a meth lab to burglary, forgery, theft, auto theft, counterfeiting. So was this examined? Was this looked at? And does he have a history of making things up? And then they just threw it out because they said the guy's, you know, not credible. But the fact that it wasn't disclosed, I think, is the problem here.
Yeah, that's what the defense of Richard Allen is going after here. How could you not disclose these seven letters that were allegedly sent to McLeland, which is the prosecution or the defense? I'm sorry, the prosecution of Richard Allen, a videotaped interview as well. And Ricky Davis, if you're just beginning to play along here, he was an inmate that had spent time with Ron Logan in prison and Keegan Klein as well. And he, back in 2017, because time is important in this story, all the way back in 2017, says that he started reaching out to authorities saying, hey, look, this guy, Ron Logan, who's in my cell with me, just confessed to these murders, and here's what he told me. And the authorities, the investigators said, oh, well, tell us, but you have to tell us in two paragraphs or less. Which I think, number one, that's bizarre. Like, keep it simple. Like, if you're trying to get details, I think you'd want any details you're going to get. So he writes a two-paragraph letter, and they start going after him, saying he's lying. They claim they did a polygraph on him. And I find it interesting the verbiage that they use anytime this is brought up. It's, he miserably failed it. Okay, when was the polygraph administered? Who administered it? What circumstances? What was asked? Because none of that seems to be out there. I kind of doubt or if they even did do the polygraph, or if they did, again, consider the source. It's the same people who seem to be the fail stop for any other information getting out or anybody investigating anything other than Richard Allen at a certain point in this case. So I'm not shocked if they were the ones who administered it and they're saying nothing came out of it. But again, let's talk about back to Ricky and his incentive to do something like this. He wasn't asking for anything extra. He wasn't asking for leniency or lesser time or anything. And if anything, he's putting himself in danger by basically being a snitch in prison. And that's not looked upon too lightly quite often.
Yeah. So, you know, possibilities. I mean, it could be he's entirely telling the truth with altruistic motives. And you can be somebody who runs a meth lab and does other horrible things and still tell the truth at times. So that's possible. Is it possible that he has a history of attention seeking? And, you know, prison is kind of boring. And does he do this sort of thing? So was there a pattern of you know, making things up? You know, I don't know. We don't have all the information. And as you say, it can certainly be questionable.
What does it say to you about his previous charges? Because this is a guy who, and I'm not trying to like lessen the significance or the seriousness of his charges, you know, running a meth lab and distributing and all that and getting 50 years is a pretty serious charge. But it's also not murdering children. And his track record doesn't seem to involve anything to do with harming human beings, I guess, directly in the way that we would think of a murder or something of that. You're making meth, yeah, you're going to harm people. But we could argue the cigarette and the alcohol industry are the same way, too. They're commercial. There seems to be, at least for me, a difference in maybe that human being and their level of empathy. People who are able to go and harm children and harm other living people, like that's something where like that's in you and that's not going to come out of you if you're capable of doing that. If you're making meth and you're doing all sorts of robbery and horrible shit like that, yes, you're harming people, but you're not doing it in that direct sort of way. And you really, would you not expect a maybe more humanistic aspects, more empathy, more someone who is capable of having, you know, care and understanding for other people and wanting to see the right thing done, especially when it comes to kids?
It is certainly possible. It is certainly possible. But it just, I mean, I couldn't call it either way. I would have to sit down with him and talk to the guy and try to determine what is his motivation here. As you say, it sort of goes against the prison code to be a snitch. So what was driving him? And I don't think we can really peg that without spending some time talking to him.
How accurate do we typically see prison confessions being? And this is a different one because this is being a snitch, basically. It's not that Ron Logan allegedly made this confession to guards or to anybody. It's alleging that it came through his cellmate here, Ricky Davis. Is it common when someone reports a confession was made for this sort of thing to be, you know, completely ignored? Or is this something that they usually do look into a little bit more to make sure, especially at the time in 2017, they have no Richard Allen. They have no main suspect. The FBI is already strongly looking in to Ron Logan. They're already like going through his property and making a case against Ron Logan. And you have this guy saying, hey, he just confessed. Why just stop at the polygraph, which not, it's not even admissible in court. Why would you not dig into this a little bit further?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. And I don't have an answer for it. How often does it happen? I'm going to guess that it's different in every prison. And we like to think that, you know, people running prisons have ethics and take these kind of things seriously and do look into it. Maybe, maybe not. And it's, you know, it's a huge, huge, messy topic. And I don't know how we can even get data on it, but it's I'm sure it happens.
Do you think we're looking at a case here of like just the most curious case of coincidences coming one after another to make this thing look so much like a cover-up, which it may be? Or is this a case where people really, really have their blinders on? And again, the thing is, there wasn't a time for blinders yet in this case in 2017. There wasn't a Richard Allen. There was nobody on their radar. So I guess you have blinders on to, well, it can't be over here if that's what we're talking about with blinders. But is that what we might be looking at? Is it a case where we have investigators so bent on one direction of it, I'm already excluding these people over here without really a whole lot of evidence, and I'm going to go this way? I mean, that I'm sure does happen, but how does that happen, and why does that happen in one's mind to be able to completely exclude a lot of valid things? Because I think a lot of us are just trying to understand, look, if there's nothing nefarious going on here, what the hell was going on in your mind?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It's a puzzle. It's strange. One would think that, you know, the search for the truth takes, you know, the top priority. Does it always? Again, humans have biases and confirmation bias. Sometimes when they've already got one idea in mind, they look for things that prove that idea. And then the other thing about Ricky Davis is, he also revealed information about Keegan Klein.
Yeah.
And so here are two, you know, potential suspects that this one person had contact with in the same prison, and then is now disclosing information about both of them that casts blame that way. So is it a case of throwing spaghetti at the wall by the defense? You know, we've got all these different possibilities, the lack of transparency on the other side, and it's really muddled.
The allegations that are coming through from the inmate here, from Ricky Davis, involving Keegan Klein, and I'm just going to paraphrase here, but the whole affidavit can be read or can be listened to on the channel. It basically get down to saying that Keegan Klein and Ron Logan were engaging in looking at child pornography and sharing it with one another back and forth, like their little ring of it, and that this would be done on a semi-regular basis. But one of them had to, Keegan had to go there and help Ron Logan with this because he's older and was kind of inept at using technology. Disturbing, 1,000%, and obviously this is, again, just the allegations of an inmate, but Klein is in prison now for exactly that, for child pornography. And he's the guy who was also supposed to be meeting one of the girls that very day, had allegedly been communicating with her through a version of social media. That, to me, of everything here, is shocking that that would be a coincidence, that the person that you're supposed to be meeting gets murdered that day. You're a predator and somehow you're not involved in that. I find that one so hard to believe.
Yeah, it's weird. And then when you throw in Logan and Klein having a connection around pornography, it's just really, really odd.
Then it makes you wonder how far does this go up the chain? And it's not like, you know, Keegan Klein and Ron Logan were like really high up in the community. They'd been there forever. They were just kind of like, you know, blobs that existed there, for lack of a better term. But it does make you wonder when you have cases like this, and I'm not specifically speaking of this case, but when you have kind of these, you know, people off in the ethers of the community, kind of the dark pockets that are into this sort of stuff. Sometimes we think, oh, not that it excuses us, but like that's just those type of people out there. Mm-hmm. That's not always the case. And I'm not accusing anybody higher up in Delphi of being involved in this, but I just want to talk generally. That's not always the case. Like this goes up tendrils to people that you may not always expect. And have you seen evidence of that in other cases, in other places where, oh God, yeah, these really scum buckets over here are into it, but guess who they're sharing buddies with?
Yeah, it certainly can happen. I have seen people arrested for kiddie porn that were, you know, pillars of the community that you would never guess. I mean, yeah, I'm thinking of, I won't say how high in the community, but yes, people in the judicial system, very high in law enforcement, and they can be into this sort of thing with really, really sordid, weird, risky behavior going on.
Is it, and I'm just thinking down the dark path here, if you are someone higher up in law enforcement or something of that nature, and again, I'm not accusing anyone in Delphi of doing this. But if you are higher up, there would be a clear advantage if you're into this sort of thing and it's being procured by somebody on the outside, somebody out there in the shadows, to have kind of a quid pro quo relationship of, yeah, you'll provide this for me and I won't go after you. And basically I'll protect you from the dark stuff you're doing over here, because I'm into it too, but it would be too obvious if I were, you know, procuring it or whatever it's called, whatever the hell they're doing.
That would be a heck of a plot for a crime novel. I'm imagining would John Grisham or someone write that story, because that's
Well, I mean, it has undertones of, you know, what we had seen. At least the allegations that we've seen over in the Gilgo Beach case with the former sheriff or whatever he was there being involved in a lot of that sort of stuff too. And then somehow Rex Huerman was, you know, going scot-free for quite a long time. And there's allegations that maybe there was some police involvement there of, you know, I'll look the other way, you look the other way. We travel in the same circles. It does make me wonder just how deep this is going to go in the land of Delphi. And it certainly does make a lot of sense if there is a cover-up going on here, why there would be a cover-up going on here, because it makes you wonder, where would investigating Ron Logan further lead to? Where would investigating Keegan Klein further and his connections lead to? It seems they wanted to stop on those two. And, you know, they got Keegan on the child porn charges and stuff. That was pretty evident when they caught that. Ron Logan, they just walked away from. And I don't know that he's ever truly been cleared by the FBI. But why one would just walk away from something that seems to have so many leads to it, so many just sparkling diamonds of, oh my gosh, look at this. This really seems like it could be big to our case, but we're going to say no, let's go after the CVS guy. It's just, it's baffling to me as to where this could go. One other detail on this, he mentioned a box cutter. Ricky Davis did in his letters to McClelland, and also into letters. Now he's sending them to some local media as well. He mentioned the box cutter, though, very, very early on in a letter to McClelland before this was even public knowledge. I mean, I suppose it could be a random guess that, hey, this is something that was part of the murder scene, but I don't know. It's a kind of specific one for out in the middle of the woods to have knowledge of. Would that not be a bit of a red flag that maybe this guy does know something?
Sure. Definitely. That's another reason to look at it closely. And the fact that it wasn't is disturbing.
Too much disturbing going on here in this case. But yeah, thank you for your insight, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author. Always great to hear it from you, because this is one that just gets deeper and darker by the day.
The latest true crime stories, expert breakdowns, and shocking twists, all in one place. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.